Welcome to the Navit Gaming Podcast, where it is our mission to explore the business and future of video games. We bring together the industry's brightest builders, investors, and thinkers to keep a pulse on current events, dissect emerging trends in games, share lessons learned, and have a great time. This podcast is also part of Navit's growing ecosystem, which ranges from free and premium research to consulting and advisory services. For more information, visit www.navic.co. This episode is brought to you by Rally Here, the proven gaming backend platform and service made specifically for cross-platform live service games. Providing cutting-edge tooling for matchmaking, cross-platform accounts, server optimization, live ops management, player progression, and community engagement, Rally Here is the one-stop shop to streamline your development processes, increase speed to market, and optimize your post-launch live services. Rally Here powers games that have been played by over 200 million gamers worldwide across PC, console, and mobile, including Smite, Paladins, Rogue Company, and many others. Rally Here's founders were also among the first to embrace cross-platform free-to-play games, meaning the Rally Here solution incorporates over a decade of hard-won experience and learnings in live service games. Rally Here's partnership approach to customer relationships makes them a trusted and experienced co-pilot to help your team as you develop and operate your live service games. Do you want to know how Rally Here can help you with your live service game? If so, simply head over to rallyhere.gg to learn more and schedule a demo. Again, that is rallyhere.gg. So with that, let's jump into the episode.
Welcome to the Navit Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, David Taylor, and today we'll be exploring the second largest UGC games platform in the world, Fortnite Creative. Epic Games paid $320 million to over 25,000 creators in the last 12 months, and during that time saw UGC content capture a whopping 35% of total Fortnite engagement. For perspective, there are over 1 million players engaging in UGC content on Fortnite during peak hours, with other top franchises like GTA and The Sims currently working to build out their own UGC platforms in time for planned launches in the next couple of years. It's a perfect time to look back at how and why the biggest video game franchises of our time decide to go all in on UGC. Today, we'll be covering the origin story of Fortnite Creative, the early days of building a leading UGC platform, and what it's like building on Fortnite Creative 5 years into its existence. I'm excited to be joined by Zach Phelps, the former senior director of product design on Fortnite Creative, along with Michael Ha, aka Birdo, the creator of minigame Box PvP, the top 10 Fortnite Creative experience. This is going to be a super interesting episode for entrepreneurs and general managers alike as we dive into how to build a successful UGC game platform and how to be successful as a creator on said platform. So we have one of the original visionaries of Fortnite Creative and one of the top beneficiaries of that vision with us today. Let's kick it off with a bit of intros, starting with Zach. Zach, what was your path to Fortnite Creative?
Yeah, no, thanks, David. Yeah, so I've been in the games industry 25 years. Just under nine of those years were at Epic Games, where I initially joined in a more production role as executive producer on what ended up becoming Fortnite Save the World. And so in that role, I spent 2 to 3 years working with the team and building out Save the World and launching that. At the same time, right as we were getting ready for launch, basically Battle Royale was taking over the world. And so Epic decided at that point to spin up a Battle Royale team. That team built an amazing game. It launched. It took over the world. And at that point, the thing that we just spent 7 years getting out into the world, I knew it was going to be a little bit of a subnote in history. So took a step back and put together an initial pitch for what do we do next? What's the next big thing that we could do with Fortnite? And working with Lowell Vaughn, we put a pretty cool pitch together for what ended up becoming Fortnite Creative. And then I spent basically 4.5 to 5 years working on that. And I most recently left Epic about a year and a few months ago to pursue my own opportunities within that space.
Awesome. I mean, it's pretty amazing that you were the early visionary of what would become this massive platform today. And super exciting to be chatting with you. Birdo, on your side, take us through sort of your journey to Fortnite Creative.
Yeah. I've been a Fortnite content creator for 5 years, but that was like my side hustle. My real job was being a software engineer. I worked for Kaiser Permanente, then Microsoft, and I actually really liked my jobs. Not many people say that, but I loved my 9-to-5. And UEFN came out, and I didn't start making maps right away, but I saw it, and then actually I got in because like one of my friends that has no coding experience made a map and it blew up, and then he showed me his paycheck. I was like, oh my gosh. And then I started learning Verse, and it was so simple and really simple APIs. And I started like liking it, started making maps. They did okay. And then, yeah, I made another map with my friend Dagwummy, and it just blew up. And then I had to quit my job. And that's where we're at now.
That's amazing. I'm sure Epic loves to hear that in terms of seeing the incentives and getting people to come over and invest in making content, and then said content ending up being a big driver of engagement on the platform.
Yeah, exactly what you said. At GDC, there's three Epic employees that came up to me and said they saw my Twitter post of me leaving Microsoft, and they just love it because that's what they do for, that's like why they're working. Like that is to give the, so I'm like you said, a prime example of what they want for people.
Yep. And that's not a dig on Microsoft, my current employer, just for the record, but it's hard to turn down the type of numbers that I think Birdo is seeing.
No, I love my job. I got a free gym, free 24/7 gym, free basketball courts, free lunch, free breakfast. I love my job. I can't stress that enough.
So if you're not going to get into UEFN, go work at Microsoft like me.
Exactly.
Awesome. So thanks for that background. Super cool to hear your story. I'd love to learn more about the details. But for now, let's take a step back in time, pass it back over to Zach. And Zach, can you just remind the audience, like, what did Fortnite Creative 1.0 look like? Because we have entrepreneurs who are building UGC game platforms. We have franchises who are interested in potentially dipping a toe into UGC, into the UGC world. So I think there's a lot of interest in understanding, like, what is that roadmap to what UEFN is today? And so could you take us back in time into what was Fortnite Creative and what did it look like?
Yeah. So initially when we put the pitch together, we'd taken a hard look at Minecraft Create, the creative booth at Minecraft. We were taking a look at Roblox. We took a look at a lot of different spaces. The initial version was, how do we get to market as fast as possible? We knew Fortnite was blowing up. We had a huge audience. And we knew some portion of a creative product in the market space was going to increase engagement. We wanted to keep people engaged inside Fortnite and give them new tools and things to play with. And so the initial version, actually, the LTM team at the time put together a basically what was called Playground. And Playgrounds was just, it was just the Battle Royale map, and you could go onto it and spend as much time as you wanted there. And that actually spawned a lot of the initial thoughts for what ended up becoming Creative, which is, hey, what's an MVP look like where you can just come onto the Battle Royale map, you can build a couple things, you could save it, and then you could reload it later. So that way players at that time were coming in with their friends, they were building kind of 1v1 little spaces, but they'd have to go, they'd say, hey, we're going to go meet at Tilted, we're going to do this. They would actually have to destroy everything in that space, build their little 1v1 space, and then take off. And it's like, we can do way better. We can build something relatively quickly that allowed people to save and reload their content. We got a prototype of that done relatively fast. We then decided that we wanted something a lot more robust. So as we came into December of 2018, let's see, Battle Royale launched 2017, end of 2017, pitched came together March, April, May timeframe. We got the green light. And so then December 2018 is when we released the first version of Creative, which was literally you could load in on your own little custom island where you could build stuff. It would save, it would persist, and you could invite your friends to come play with you. And we had a minimal set of game rules. Essentially, you could start and stop a game so that way you could reset the island. And that was it. There was no, at that point, we didn't have publishing yet. We didn't have any way to really be able to share those experiences. Everything was built in game through the in-game tools. It was very minimal. And then the goal was just iterate very fast. Going from there, it's like, how do we iterate to the next set of capacity, next set of capacity? With the goal being, it's like opening up as much as possible for players and creators to be able to do.
Got it. And so it sounds like you guys were prioritizing maybe speed to market in terms of what features to push out. I've talked a bit about the trilemma for every UGC game platform. They're sort of balancing between accessibility, ease of creation, creation speed, and depth of gameplay, like how the variety of choices that you can make and how far you can go in terms of like game progression. I'm curious, when designing Fortnite Creative, was there a lens that you looked at in terms of thinking about your target audience and what type of tools they would be willing to engage with?
Yeah, I think for the most part, yes, absolutely. And so the key phrase in my mind is that it wasn't really, it's really more about capabilities, providing as many capabilities as we could as fast as possible, and not worrying as much about the overall accessibility of those tools or how they need to be used. Relying on the fact that social media, other creators, the fact that we had a really big audience that have an infinite amount of time on their hands. And so people will experiment and figure things out that we never expected from the tools, but they'll also figure out what we intended from the tools, either through documentation that we could provide or just through them experimenting and then sharing it with their friends. And so we knew from the start that's the most important thing was making sure that people could do as much as possible, as fast as possible, even if it made it more difficult to kind of figure it out. So targeting depth of gameplay first. Now, at the same time, there's a balance to that because as you get into more complex things, you get there's more challenges at making those things available to the users to use in a robust, dependable, reliable way. And so we also made sure that it's like everything could be as robust and dependable as possible. So that's a lot of the trade-offs that we had in the early days were because we were more trained off for consistency, not necessarily accessibility.
That's really interesting because as someone who's been studying the space for a couple of years now and who was looking at it before UEFN launched, I would have thought that accessibility was a top priority, right? Because you've got a primarily console user base, so you've got to design tools that can be used by a controller. And, you know, just drag and drop tools inherently are pretty easy. So, you know, as much as you weren't focused on accessibility, I think you guys did a pretty good job of making it accessible. A lot of creators that I've spoken to over the years said that they got into Fortnite Creative just because they wanted to make new maps to play with their friends. They were not thinking about these things blowing up. They were just like, yeah, this will be fun for me to create a new experience for me and my friends.
I think that point, David, is really good. I think that experience is more because there's early on, there was basically two paths that we had planned to go down. And we knew that we had both paths. One was going to be in-game, being able to create things in-game. And then that experience, we wanted to make sure it felt game-like. So accessibility wasn't important, but making sure it felt like a game was important. And so, and that making sure that felt like a game led to some accessibility choices that we made. But the other side, though, was UEFN, which was we knew we wanted to provide a path into Unreal Engine and some of the more broad tools that would then encompass to be able to allow people to make deeper and more robust games.
Got it. So can you give us some examples on key features that you guys prioritized early on? And what are some features that you sort of were like, we would love to do this, but it's not the right time?
Yeah, like early on features was basically we just made a list of game types that we were like, we know people will want to play these. And we know people will want to make these. And so 1v1, deathmatch, capture the flag, like we just made a big list. We talked to a bunch of YouTubers at the time, a lot of people that were in the space. And we were like, hey, what games do you guys, Prop Hunt, what games do you guys want to play? And then what we did is we just broke those games down, made a list of, okay, what are the ingredients necessary that we need to provide to creators to allow them to make these game types? And we just basically started seeing where the commonalities were and then just start prioritize that list and just moved down through. Team Settings device was a pretty early device that we worked on. Something that would grant you an inventory item or create a spawner in the game so you could grab an item and use it someplace that spawn, you could choose where the player spawned. Like really basic things, but things that are necessary to allow people to create in-game experiences. Some of the things that we prioritized low, still to this day, Creative still doesn't support, I believe, unless they've added it recently, but is undo. It's the most commonly asked for thing. It's like, right. Hey, just give me the ability to undo the thing I just did. And it just doesn't exist in Creative at the moment. And that really just ended up coming down to the amount of complexity to make a good, complete solution to that problem versus the 60 to 75%, like making it work 70% of the time. It's a really easy 70% of the time solution. It's a really hard 99% of the time solution. And so we just continually knocked that down the road, partly because we're seeing really good success from creators.
Berto, how badly would you like a Command Z function for you?
Well, in Creative, UEFN, it's all good. Yeah. There's for sure. And Creative 1.0, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like when you're replacing a device, like you're stuck with it.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I do. I avoid 1.0 as much as possible, I actually never use it.
We're going to get back more into that. Actually, I have some questions about that. But before we get onto that, I'm curious, like back at 1.0, like once it launched, were there early challenges your team faced? And then also I'm curious, what were the signals that you were really on to something like?
Yeah, early challenges are mostly dealing with a creative, like anytime you put that initial product out there, that initial game, and you start getting a community built around it. We were fortunate because Battle Royale and Fortnite was so big, there was a community that came in and used all the tools right away. And from the usage of those tools, we got a really solid community that was very interested in what we were doing. And they immediately, it's like, as soon as you have a community, you now have people you need to serve and provide them with amazing tools and good experiences. And you want to keep that momentum. And so that was probably the biggest challenge was just listening to the community, understanding what the motivations were internally for what we wanted to accomplish longer term, and trying to balance all those factors to make sure that we could keep the community engaged while we were building for that longer term vision. And so some of the key signals were forums. We spent a lot of time with Reddit, Discord, a lot of interviews that we had with creators. If Birdo had been there at the beginning, like I would have talked to him within probably 24 hours of his map launching. Like I talked with creators, like as soon as we launched, I was talking with creators on a weekly basis and tracking down people doing cool stuff and seeing how we could support them and what we could do better for them. So that was a huge signal. And then there was data signals as far as the number of hours people were creating, the types of games that people were creating that we looked pretty closely at. And then just internally, it's like, how did we feel about the product and what were the things that we were excited to enable and the different types of games that we thought would resonate within Fortnite and allow people to do cool stuff.
That's super interesting. I'm curious about the sort of the engagement side, because I took a look at Fall Guys Creative Construction when that came out, and it seemed like there wasn't a ton of engagement in UGC content from a player perspective. But they've continued to invest in it. And it did make me wonder. I wonder how much of this is just for that small segment of players who are creatively inclined. Does it radically increase their engagement? Because now they can do more than just play. They can also be creative. And is that engagement worthwhile just in and of itself?
I think so. I think anytime part of Fortnite Creative in some ways, and a lot of these games in my mind is like, you have a game that somebody loves and they love deeply and they're playing it a lot, and giving them some way to engage deeper with that product, whether it's monetization opportunities, things to spend money on that allow them to show their love of that product, or a new way for them to spend time with that game, I think is incredibly important. And creative ends up being it's like an infinite amount of time. Like you can spend as long and as deep as you want in crafting and manipulating something to your heart's desire. And so anytime that you can provide a depth of space in that way, I think it really deepens the opportunity for someone that wants to be creative to then spend a lot of time with your game. From a lot of the things I've seen within the communities, whether you look at like Gary's Mod, portions of Roblox, but I think Gary's Mod's actually probably a better example, but Minecraft, like people spend large amounts of times in those modes. We saw the same thing within Fortnite Creative. Like once that was accessible, there were people that were very dedicated to that mode, and they'd spend more time in that mode than they would necessarily playing Battle Royale. It's not necessarily a large percentage of the audience, but I think it's a big enough percentage that if a developer can provide a creative experience, I think it's worth doing, especially if they can find ways to facilitate those experiences, then getting reintroduced back to the communities. I mean, like the classic Warcraft 3 modules or game experiences are a perfect example. Even StarCraft, if you talk to people that play StarCraft Arcade, they love StarCraft Arcade. They're so deeply invested in that tool and that space. But it's a small community. It's niche. It's like you have to find somebody. But then once you start talking to them, they will go on for hours about how either they've created something or the games that they played within that ecosystem.
Super interesting. I mean, I know you're probably not at liberty to say the numbers, but just as a rule of thumb, it seems to be that like 1% of your total player base ends up being your creator base on a UGC platform.
I would say that it's probably I think from the things I've seen, it's a little different. Like, I think 1% ends up being like the tip of the spear. But like, those are the people that other people end up seeing and end up getting, creating content that a lot of people consume. I think that 1% is generally a good number. But when you've created tools that allow people to express play with each other, and so it's more like a sandbox environment where people can go play with their friends without a goal of creating something that somebody else consumes, the numbers are significantly bigger.
Interesting. I wonder if, since it's gone from Fortnite Creative 1.0 to UEFN, if the number of casual creators has actually decreased because the barrier to entry has grown with all of the capabilities that have been introduced. Going back to sort of that trilemma problem.
Yeah, I think anytime you deepen the amount of skill that's necessary to use the tools, you're going to get a smaller and smaller audience that ends up using those tools to be able to do something interesting. Like it's just going to happen. And I think the key with Fortnite is that it's such a massive audience that even if it's one out of 10 million does a phenomenal thing like Birdo, it's going to make a huge difference to the overall experience of all those other players inside of Fortnite. And so that's where it's like the Birdo example is exactly what everything from the start was counting on Birdo. That's where we were. It's like we knew a Birdo existed in the world. We weren't sure who they were, where they were at, what they were doing, but we knew if we built the tools and allowed enough expression that eventually the Birdo would appear. He would make something really interesting, develop, put a ton of time into it, love it to death, and his love and passion would show through those tools into gameplay that then would engage that bigger audience.
I think this is a perfect time to sort of transition over to Birdo and ask him a bit about his experience on UEFN. I'm curious, you know, just to level set, you know, we've been talking about the difference between UEFN, Unreal Editor for Fortnite, and Fortnite Creative 1.0. Birdo, can you just give us a quick breakdown of what this this came into being last year in March. Epic made a big announcement at GDC that they were unlocking a ton of creative potential for creators on their platform through tools that integrated Unreal Engine and Fortnite Creative. What did that actually look like in terms of the tools available and what was now possible with that introduction?
Yeah, no, when they introduced UEFN, looking at Unreal Engine, when people use that, it seems so daunting, but UEFN, this is a good thing. It felt like a dumbed down version of Unreal Engine, which kind of, it's like a simplified version so anyone could use. And it was like so easy. There's a Control Z, there's an undo, there's lots of tools you can use coding. But in your first point too, in the last point you said that I also saw a lot of creators complain they couldn't adapt from Creative 1.0 to this. I still see creators, they aren't like me. Instead of using UEFN, they'll use Creative 1.0 as much and then UEFN as little as possible because they are struggling to adapt. And also they don't like using code, but that's how I see it. I don't know if that answers.
For you as a technical creator, was it difficult for you to sort of onboard to the first scripting language?
No, not at all. It's really simple APIs. Everything's there, all the documentation. But for me with the coding background, I think it's really simple. And I think anyone with the coding background could pick that up. I think the real learning curve, like my friends, they're like, oh, can we get into UEFN? Can we do this? Like the real learning curve is playing Fortnite. And I played Fortnite every day for 5 years. So like how you use these devices, how you use the item granter, how you use these mutator zones, that's something that you like have to be playing Fortnite and be in the creative space to understand like what these devices can actually do to their most potential. But other than that, it's like very simple APIs in theory.
Yeah, we've talked about on this podcast before just the importance of having people who are native to the platform building. You see a lot of non-native, either professionalized game developers or agencies trying to come onto the platform thinking that they can compete with kids and make better games. But ultimately, I think being the target audience yourself is really helpful in making sure you're designing things that people actually want to play.
I'd say that's one of the biggest success factors for me and my partner, Dag, is we literally just play every day. So it's like when we think something's fun, it's probably fun for everyone else. Like And like you said, there's so many big studios that came in, thought they were going to make a big scene and like their trailers, everything looks amazing. Like I've never seen that. Wow. You like look up like, this is super cool. Okay, I'm leaving. Right when you go in their game. This isn't fun. It's happened many times. Yeah.
So I think given that you have that perspective, I would love for you to just take us through your creative process from the seed of an idea all the way to live operations of a successful game. What did that look like for you?
Yeah. So for, I guess I'll just go with our minigame example. We were making some maps, and then there's a big trend on box PVPs and superpowers. And at the same time, they also took away LTMs, which is like to build up creative. So people wouldn't play the LTMs creative. And then we're like, we want to bring LTMs back. And then, so we were like, all right, let's do LTMs on a round system. What Fortnite had one shot. I'm sorry, Blitz or some more catch, some really popular LTMs. And then we realized there's only like 12 really fun ones in theory. We're like, all right, let's make our own LTMs. And that's where the mini game ideas, you know? And then at the same time, when we thought of that, we're like, wait, this is genius because we're not limited to a set of anything. We can literally just make a new mini game every week. And then we're like, why hasn't anyone done this? And then right when I thought of that, I was like, all right, I got to work on this. And I spent two all-nighters, like, or three, and just like, I need to push this out. And it turned out both our videos blew up. And that's another important thing is like me and my partner's channels, we got like 5 million followers total or something. So that's another key success is just showing it to an audience. And that's how we came with that idea.
Yeah, and having an established audience, you can see in the way that Epic incentivizes their payouts or structures their calculation for how payouts are distributed. Bringing new players to the platform is one of their key bits of the formula. I think a big part of that is incentivizing creators like yourself to show their Fortnite maps to audiences who may not already be playing Fortnite or have lapsed. And so I'm sure you're probably benefiting from not just having a large audience, but also having a large audience that is re-engaging in Fortnite.
Yeah.
I'm curious, like, you know, it's possible to be a solo developer, but who are some of the people or the roles that you rely on most in order to keep your game updated on a day-to-day basis?
I work with another developer from France, so a lot of pair programming with him. There's, I guess this is a negative thing, but there's a lot of like weird bugs in UEFN that like you would never, ever figure out. There'd probably be almost like some, they have to go like through so many weird solutions to figure like to fix stuff that like are buggy that you need to like be in the group of like developers that literally make games to figure out these bugs. So that's actually the key thing. So it's because the other day I'm like, hey, I keep getting a black screen like every time I like turn on this camera. They're like, oh, you have to do these four steps. I was like, how would you figure this out? So like that's been the one of the best things as a developer is like having a network of other developers that go through the same problem as you. And that vice versa, I was like, oh, you fix this by the, and it's not intuitive. It doesn't make any sense, but like that's really helped me and like keep my game like up when there's like lots of random, like I can give one good example. One time Fortnite updated and then it broke round systems. And so when a game ended on a round, it would go like 3, 2, 1, and then it wouldn't end. It would just stay there. I was like, hey, has anyone dealt with this? And then Dilly, one of the most popular map creators, just messaged me like, hey, just take away the 3, 2, 1. It was a weird solution, but it worked. And it was like stuff like that. That's helped me the most. And then for other teams, I guess they would have a graphic designer. That's something I'm not using too much in my map. No custom assets, nothing like that. Or a 3D modeler. And yeah, someone that's usually good with UIs, that's usually what they specialize in, but maybe someone can be good at programming and UI, but I think those are the main roles.
So you're self-sufficient, it sounds like. You're developing your own games with your partner and you're promoting those games through your own channels and you don't have a high reliance on custom assets. You're sort of, it is really just you two at this point.
Yeah, at this point. But we do, for the custom assets, that's like where we want to expand on and making it a full-fledged thing. Things I'm not good at is UI and those custom assets. So we're looking on to bring people to do that part. But it's definitely it's not like the top importance. Like we want to make the most fun mini games at the end of the day. That's what's going to draw the most people. Like keeping that system. Right now we're like every week or 2 weeks we make a new mini game. And that's like the most important thing is to make something fun. But that'd be nice at the end of the day to have those cosmetics and stuff. But it's on the back burner right now to find someone to do that.
Got it. And I think, you know, one of the other, we talked about accessibility. If you're new to UEFN, if you're new to even coding and you're getting these errors and you're not really sure, did I do something wrong? Or is this the issue with the platform that can add to the frustration? I think, Berto, you have the benefit of sort of knowing, like, okay, I did everything right here. So like my code is working properly, but I'm still getting this error. There must be an error with the system and I need to go find a workaround. Going back to that sort of accessibility conversation, I can see that being a real roadblock for folks who are new to the platform.
Yeah, 100%.
How important is community management to your success in terms of getting players to come back to your game?
At this moment, we're actually seeing it less, but at the beginning, it was crucial to get your map. The first 2 weeks on Discover are like very key, and having promotion, having a channel is probably 50% of it. Like some people make really cool games that don't even go past 10 players. For us, for Minigame, like I think in the first hour of our videos being posted, we were at like 3,000 players. So it's like very crucial at the beginning, but not now that our map's established as much, it's not as important. Like we still have a Discord, we still are doing updates, we're still making videos, but the value definitely, I think we could actually sustain without making video if we delete our Discord at this point. It would still maintain for a while. I'm not saying forever, but for a pretty long time. I'd say at the first month, it's like integral, crucial.
So you've got Discord, you've got YouTube. I think you mentioned that you're also on TikTok. And when you look at sort of those as your sort of levers, which are the most critical, which are driving most players to your games today?
TikTok and Shorts. I'd say TikTok is better at the beginning because you can get a spike in views on TikTok, which is, you know, you can get a million view video in like less than 3 hours, realistically, if it's the right video. And what we look at as a good measurement of how engaging the videos is bookmarks. They bookmark it. They're probably going to go back. So the first video I made got like 120,000 bookmarks in a day. And the second video, another 100,000, and the third, another 100,000. So it's like people like, we're coming back to that. And then Shorts is also really good. It's not as a powerful of like instant velocity, but Shorts is really strong and constantly bringing people in. Because Shorts, if your YouTube channel is good, like Dags, mine is not as good as Dags, but his will constantly get views. So it's constantly bringing in people. My TikTok has at a certain point, maybe after like 2 days, zero more views, which is fine. Like it gave it, but that's crazy velocity. So there's the pros and cons. And I guess if I were to say what's better for most people, it'd be like having a viral TikTok. So a viral short in that sense, because that velocity is so key into like breaking through at the beginning and getting on trending and then putting it into the Discover algorithm. Discord, we mainly use it as a key to talk to our community and bug fixes and maybe suggestions on mini games, but it's been very helpful. The most thing is for 99% of bugs, like you get videos of it. Stuff that we've never seen. So that's where we use Discord. It's been really helpful in that sense.
Got it. So Discord isn't so much of an acquisition or retention lever, but it is good for just having a line into your community and hearing any problems that come up.
Yeah, feedback. Exactly.
That's super interesting. And I'm curious just on, you said that you don't feel like you need to do as much marketing at this point through TikTok and YouTube. What are you seeing in the data that's telling you that it's not as necessary as it used to be?
Yeah. One is our TikToks and Shorts aren't as popular. They weren't they're not getting millions of views beforehand. So they're less interest. Like maybe they just know the map or they know what's coming. They're already playing it. So our TikToks haven't gone as viral as our first like four or five. So we're seeing that, but we're not seeing like our players dipping down or anything. And then we've also, there was a lieu of just not like we didn't, we did a huge update, so we didn't update the map and we didn't make any videos for 2 weeks and nothing really changed. If anything, it still went, had highs too, and we just don't see any. We're seeing a very consistent pattern of falling the player count. That's pretty much why.
One other thing we've heard is that the thumbnail is critical to the success of a game. And it's something that we've seen both on Fortnite and Roblox. And I'm curious, is that the key in your experience, Birdo? And B, Sag and Birdo, do you guys have a perspective on why thumbnail is so important, like why this would be prioritized?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just like YouTube. It's just your first instinct is what colors is also extremely important. Your eye will catch on to something that's more colorful or saturated, like the colors. Definitely key because they have there's so many things on your screen. I think there's 20 icons. To be a differentiator is crucial. And also not to make it like too complicated, not make sure the text is readable. Yeah, no, I think it's just like YouTube where it's like 50% of getting the player in and that's what you need. But yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the same experience I've had. It's very much, it's basically the door. It's the conversion. It's the first funnel step, which is, can you convert them from somebody that's looking through Discovery to choosing to play your game? currently we don't get metrics on that through Epic systems. So we don't know how well a thumbnail performs, but it's very easy to look at the games overall and see where certain games are, like, it's a good game, but just poorly marketed and just doesn't do well, versus a game that's really well marketed, but really not a good game, actually can do really well. And so you see all those examples, and then you get the example of good thumbnail and good game. That's where the magic starts to really happen.
The part that is a bit puzzling to me is, like, if I were designing a UGC game platform, I would want to make sure that I elevated the ones that were the best games based off of engagement and retention, and not the thing that was the most clickable thumbnail. So I'm just trying to process, like, you know, clearly the algorithm is favoring, and not in on all platforms, right? On YouTube, the algorithm is favoring things with a high click-through rate, but if it has totally poor engagement, it still might do really well. And that, to me, seems counterintuitive to what a platform's goals are in terms of getting people into content they enjoy.
Yeah, I think Mr. Beast brought this up one time, is like, the thumbnail is so important because once they're clicked, they're almost invested. I'd say for me, if I go into a map, I'm going to give it my 5 minutes. And that's more than 5 minutes on any other map with a bad thumbnail. So that's how they view it. And actually, I forgot about these points that are like, that just even prove how important a thumbnail is. There used to be maps that literally put like fake items like that weren't going to be in the game, and they just shot straight to the top. They don't even have that item in the game. It's literally just a fake item in the start, like the Zapatron. You cannot put that in creative. And maybe they had a fake Zapatron on the map, or like a picture of it that wasn't actually there, but like, they would still play that map, and it got probably good playtime because they're probably just like, they're in the map and then there's fighting, so they don't even think about it. They're just going to start going shooting. So that's, yeah, it's just another example of how thumbnails are just so powerful.
Yeah, and I think part of the challenge too is like Epic Smart, and they're trying to figure out how to do this really well. YouTube Smart, yeah, like all these companies are employing really smart, talented people trying to figure out that exact question that you just asked, David, and you know, that you just said. It's like, which is like, hey, don't we want people in engaging content, not content that's necessarily well marketed? And I think the challenge is that most of these systems have some feedback loop on number of people that have engaged with that piece of content. So within Fortnite, we have CCU, and that's a really prominent number with pretty much no other gauge of quality from a visual perspective inside of Discover. And so really good marketing can inflate your CCU, which then creates a snowball effect within that Discover algorithm to further push that for more people to see. They see a high CCU plus good marketing, they'll be like, oh, there must be something good in this map. And then once there's some time spent there, it's hard to discern just from a back-end perspective of, is that engagement because of good marketing or is that engagement because of good gameplay? Either way, it ends up being quote-unquote engagement. But what I will say is that over the course of the last 9 months, though, as Epic and Fortnite have evolved this, I think we've seen more and more good games rise to the top. And as those good games rise, they'll take a little bit more of that space. It'll be harder for some of this stuff that's just marketing to be able to break into it. I think it'll require good marketing from a thumbnail perspective. It'll require TikTok, it'll require external promotion. And then it'll require a good game. And we'll see that competition increase the overall quality of the experiences, along with changes that I think Fortnite will continue to make in relationship to that algorithm, trying to choose better content.
Awesome. I think this is a good time to sort of transition to talking about UAS and tooling a bit. One of the things that, Zach, you just said is the quality of content, the type of content is going to change over time. Berto, I'm curious on your end, do you view every time there's a new tooling update that unlocks a new capability, do you view this as a potential threat of there's new content that could be made to displace you? Or do you get excited about it in terms of how you can incorporate that into a minigame box PvP?
More the latter. I guess so far, I don't want to jinx it, but there have been like lots of people that have copied the map, literal copies in a different form. And we've sustained a lot of coffee. So I'm less scared of that as long as we stay ahead. And I get excited because like when there's a new tool, it's okay, how can we use that and make it in a fun mini game, which is even better because a lot of maps can't do that. They can't use the camera tool. That would make no sense in their map. But for us, because we can condense it to a 1-2 minute game, if it fails, but if it works, it's great. I get excited personally for Mind Map.
That's great. I mean, you know, you see a lot in UGC, people taking what already exists and making one slight innovation and taking market from the original creator. But I'm curious, when you think about pushing these updates as new tools come out, is it like, how fast do you have to move in order to stay ahead and make sure that your map continues to be the best minigame box PvP map?
I guess from that perspective, it's just, if we can use the tool to make a fun gaming game, we will. If we don't, just keep focusing on making the best games. Like, that's how we're going to stay ahead, is we're just going to constantly make fun games. We're not going to look at other people's maps. We're going to try to be the driver in the space. I've never been in, a lot of people do go in other people's maps to learn, but I don't want to learn about their stuff. Like, I just want to make stuff that's my idea, what I think is fun. So I want to be the driver. I don't really want to copy anyone. So that's how I think about it. Like, I can use the tool, if not, great, but I'm just going to make, next week, I'm going to make a super fun minigame. That's my goal, constantly.
You're like, purist.
Next week. Yeah. Some people do go in others' map and learn and iterate off that, but I don't like to do that.
Are there features on the horizon that you're excited about?
The biggest feature from GDC that they were talking about, I guess the biggest trouble for a lot of Fortnite devs and a lot of the map creators is like, each update, something breaks, no matter what, something's going to break. And there's three instances that it completely broke our map, set us straight to zero, pretty much. So like, at GDC, they were talking about a versioning. So when they release a new update, your map won't be on that version. It'll be on a previous version. And then you have to migrate eventually to the new one, but you don't have to do it immediately on that update. So it'll just be in a previous state, which sounds amazing. That'd solve all those problems. So like, when we are ready to move to that update, or we know that mutator zones are bugged, like, then we can adapt and then go to the new one and add the new features, whatever they add. So that's when that's from GDC, when I was like, oh my gosh, yes, our map won't ever go straight to zero on update day. And I don't have to be up at 2 a.m. like panicking.
I've actually heard from a couple of creators of their maps breaking with updates, and in some cases, them not being able to get their audience back, which I can't imagine the frustration that one would feel if that happened.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a mental thing too. It goes straight to zero. And like, in both those instances where our map broke, other top maps weren't breaking because they're not on a round system. The top maps hit Crazy Red, they're not on a round system. So it wasn't messing up theirs, or they didn't use as many mutator zones where it wasn't crucial to their game. So like, it could sustain. And for the maps that were, they got super punished, and like, they didn't go back to their exact spot. But like, I can imagine if your map isn't in one of the top 20, like, it would be even harder to bring back that audience. Like, you just lost like a person that wanted to go to your map, and so it's even harder. So what you said, a lot of people probably couldn't even bring back their momentum after that. It's pretty disastrous.
Zach, when you take a look at this space, are there any features that you think are particularly critical?
The things I'm excited about are things that start facilitating making your own weapons, doing your own collision, things that really facilitate more gameplay aspects and being able to create more gameplay elements with the systems that exist, interact with them. So like, on the roadmap, I know there's the scene graph work that Epic's currently working on. I think it's going to be huge, as well as like
the scene graph. Dude, I've seen a lot of excitement about it, but I don't quite follow.
Yeah, I think it's more just probably the best way to think about it is it's more just facilitating a way to get to fundamental building blocks and to create new prefab elements that include different components, like a collision system, and so it's. Comes back down to, it's like, we're like Fortnite's like Fortnite Creative and UEFN are working their way from the top down, which is like, oh, what if Battle Royale can we open up to people to be able to modify and use? And so that's going top down. And so Scene Graph is like one of the first things getting enabled that's like in this middle, kind of lower middle area, where it's like it's almost like the equivalent of coding in some way. It's like VerseScript only for data. And so now it's, now I can really author data in a way that the engine understands and really facilitates the kind of like the way that Fortnite operates. And so now those components work together. So you get like itemization will come part of probably will come out of some of the scene graph work, because those things have to go together to be able to package how an item appears in the world, like what happens when you drop it out of your inventory. And so a lot of those pieces that are just really difficult to allow creators to use until you've done something really fundamental like that.
Cool. And so I'd love to zoom out and look at it, look at the platform perspective. We talked about sort of the need to build something that the audience wants. And right now, the audience wants things that are sort of battle royale adjacent. But LEGO did launch LEGO Fortnite. I think one of the reasons they did that was not just to re-engage the community, but also to try and draw in a new audience. And that new audience had the potential to spur demand for things that were outside of the shooter genre. However, we saw even today, it's still 90% shooter content, even when you exclude Epic's games themselves. So people are still primarily engaging in shooter content. I'm curious, you know, for either of you, you know, what do you think Epic needs to do in order to change what's popular on Fortnite in order to grow that audience?
I guess I can take a stab at it first. For me, I guess I am in that demographic. I have no interest in playing tycoons, personally. Some of them are really fun, though. Like, I could see they're really good qualities. Like, I actually avoid it because they're too addicting. Like, YouTuber tycoon, I was like, I want to see what happens when you get 100 million subs. But I was like, playing it for an hour, and I was like, and it's they got like the nice popping noise when you get a sub, and it's like really like it just makes you want to keep playing. But for me as a Fortnite player, like no UAFN, like I just want to play combat games. That's what I get on Fortnite for at the end of the day, is to do build fights, to play box fights, BR, like that's what I get on. So I think it's more like an overtime kind of thing. You have to grow a new audience. And I think it's slowly, it's in my eyes, it won't be there for another year or two till we get like those growing audiences. Cause the only real game I play that isn't a fighting game, and sometimes I'll play Guess Who with a friend, but like realistically I am that demographic. So I understand, like, I'm probably never going to be playing those maps. So it's like you have to, like what you said earlier, is generate this new audience from videos and stuff. And I think it'll be a slow process. But I think in 2 or 3 years, we'll see like tower defense games being really popular, traditional things that we have not, like that people have made right now, but we'll probably do better in 2 or 3 years down the road. That's how I view it.
I think this is like the quandary of kind of all instantiated audiences. Like an audience creates momentum that wants certain things. Your discovery and your feedback systems tend to facilitate that audience finding the things that they're interested in, which then doubles down into those things being popular, which then doubles down into bringing more people into that same audience. And I think there's multi-pronged challenge. It's everything from how do you reward things that are not shooters, and how do you ensure that they have space within the platform? It's making sure that they have all the tools that are necessary to make the things that are not shooters feel good. Part of the reason that shooters are so popular within Fortnite is because Fortnite is functionally a shooter. And so shooting feels really good. Building feels awesome. Those are really ingrained things. The way your character moves in relationship to those activities works really well. Your character navigating up walls and through other things has been something really recent that Fortnite has done to try to broaden the types of experiences that could be played. And just even the mantling elements have made platforming a much more accessible thing within the space. So what will need to happen over time is that the tools will need to get more robust. There'll need to be spaces for those audiences to exist and find the content that they want to play. And then there's going to need to be incentives of some type for developers to want to build those experiences inside of Fortnite to be able to try to engender creating and allowing those audiences to grow. I think what Berto said, though, is also spot on, which is once you put those ingredients together, it's still going to take time. You're relying on some amount of friend-to-friend growth that'll take time to grow. And the other realization is there's a lot of people in the world that have made a kind of an arbitrary decision about whether or not Fortnite is something that's right for them or not. And so there's some number of people that don't even know what Fortnite is about, other than they don't want to play a free-to-play game. And so have just opted out just independently. And trying to figure out how do you, so that last piece of this is like, how does Epic or even creators like Berto, how do we create more opportunities, reconsideration events that allow people to look at and go, oh, I didn't know Fortnite was about that. I will go give that a try. And I think LEGO is a great example that showed a lot of promise and continues to show a lot of promise in allowing people to have those reconsideration events about rethinking their mind, oh, Fortnite's more than just a battle royale.
Yeah, exactly what Zach said is my brother and my fan, or brother and his friends, they're like, oh, so you just play the BR all day. I was like, no, because I knew back in the day they loved Guitar Hero. So I was like, no, Fortnite is everything. So I showed them Festival and they're like, wait, this is amazing. Like we're flying as like Peter Griffin on like festivals. And they were like, they downloaded it. They had no idea Festival was a thing because in their mind, that preconceived notion, Fortnite is the BR. Like that's all it is. They don't even know creative. They don't even know anything about UEFN. That's probably the majority of everyone outside of the Fortnite space. That's what they picture is like that VR, like shooting experience. I think over time, yeah, hopefully building up that knowledge, but that's what it is at right now.
That's super interesting. I think a couple of points that stand out to me are, you know, Zach, one, the point that the game sort of Epic has prioritized making certain things feel really good. And that is what content you see doing the best. So shooter, mantling, hobbies was the next most popular type of game genre that we saw after shooters. And that's because in part, it sounds like Fortnite does such a good job of movement mechanics and animation. So those all feel really good to play. I think that's something I hadn't considered. It's not just about growing the audience. It's also about growing the tool set and allowing for these new types of games to feel really good just from a gameplay perspective. So will be really interesting to see, you know, we saw, I think Lego didn't have as much of an impact as I had hoped it would, but maybe these things take time and, you know, repeated instances of it's more than just Battle Royale will finally drive home to non-shooter players that this is a place for them as well. One of the things that was big news was Fortnite returning to mobile in Europe. I think mobile is obviously a massive potential audience. I'm curious what you guys think will happen when Fortnite returns to mobile. Will we see something similar to Roblox where you have 80% of engagement happening on mobile, or what type of numbers are we expecting to see there?
I don't know about the data, but I do know the most played portion of Fortnite is on console, PS4 and Xbox. So that's actually a lot of our games is we don't want it to feel too good on mouse and keyboard, like no advantage on mouse and keyboard. Like we do try to make it good for controller. Like there is one game that you could like aim crazy with the mouse and keyboard and be easier. And we scrapped that because it was like, it didn't feel good on controller. So for our games, we actually target towards console. And I don't know if that's still the case, but I think it's mainly going to always be like that. Cause I remember when they did the numbers, it was like significant, like console was the biggest audience, but that could have changed.
I think as we get into mobile, like mobile's a big, I mean, just having accessibility to be able to play at any point you want, even if you're a console player or PC player, there may be times where you're at a friend's house or you're doing something where, you know, playing on mobile is the way that you can play. So I think the key things for Fortnite is that they've really prioritized crossplay and the ability for you to be able to easily just jump in and play with your friends, regardless of what device you're on. And not having mobile, specifically iOS, not having that as a space where you can play Fortnite is really limited some of the advantages of that cross-play system, specifically over cellular networks, right? It's just the overall accessibility of that. So I think it's huge. There's a big audience there, and I think we will see a lift in players. How big that lift is, I don't know. I think it probably depends upon, is it on iOS? How easy is it for people to get into that marketplace? How easy is it for people to download? Currently, Fortnite's available on Android phones, which is huge in Europe, but the accessibility, the ease of which you get the Epic Games launcher, download it to your Android device, install Fortnite, there's just a lot of warnings between you and playing that game on your mobile device at the moment, which really prevents the audience from converting.
That makes sense. So it sounds like we're bullish on it increasing engagement with the existing audience, but maybe not unlocking a ton of new users who don't have consoles and only have access via a tablet.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong. And I hope it becomes like Roblox where like a huge surplus audience comes in. But I don't, that's how I view it, what you said.
I think there may be a lot of people that play Roblox right now that would play Fortnite if it was available on mobile. And so I think we could see that audience show up most likely because they have friends that are playing Fortnite, but just don't have a way to play it otherwise.
All right. So we might see some more competition between Roblox and Fortnite as a result of mobile accessibility. On that note, I'm curious, do you guys think that there will be another UGC game platform as significant as Fortnite and Roblox, or is it always just going to be these two UGC game behemoths competing?
I guess I don't know too much about other spaces and stuff. I just know Fortnite is such a huge game that I can't imagine another game could build a UGC experience like with the audience, pre-made audience, like that's this big. Like I can't imagine even if Call of Duty had something with a huge, it's not even going to come close to Fortnite. So I can't imagine it. But I don't know too much about the space because I've just been playing Fortnite. I only play Fortnite. So it's a kind of outside in perspective. I don't think I have the best knowledge, but for me, I don't think it's going to happen for a long time.
I think it's tough. I think there's two different questions that you have in there, David, which is, I think one question is, do we think that there will be another game that's as big as Fortnite or as big as Roblox? I think the answer is yes. I think there will be some game at some point in the next 10 years that ends up being as big, that captures the cultural moment in a unique way and gets a lot of people to come in. Now, will that game have a UGC space? I think it's really hard to build a UGC game and to build a really good game that also captures this cultural moment. It's just like building a hit game is just hard, period. Putting UGC on top of it is really difficult. Fortnite was like a best case scenario. The way Fortnite was built really allowed it to be enabled by UGC. Like the destruction and the way the pieces existed in the engine, basically the whole way the game was architected really facilitated this creative space. Roblox, on the other hand, has had 18 years of growth, and they really hit it during the pandemic. But it's taken a long time for them to get as big as they are now. I don't see anyone on the horizon right now, in any space, even with huge audiences. Facebook with Meta World, was it Meta Worlds? Anyways, but I don't see anybody that has a big enough audience that also is interested in playing the game that's built by them to be able to convert in. I do think something will supplant it, will supplant both of these within the next 10 years, but it's hard to predict what it will look like. My guess is it will most likely be strongly AI enabled in some way. There's an accessibility piece there, but it's also, but in my mind, it's more about facilitating the speed of development between the idea and getting something to play. And so I think something like that will pop up, but I think it's going to surprise us when it does. So it'll be something that just comes out of nowhere.
Awesome. I want to move towards wrap up, but before we do that, just curious what is in store for you guys. Let's say you hopped into a real life Rift and emerged 3 years from now with a Bunker Jonesy beard. How would developing for Fortnite have changed, and how would your roles as leaders in the space have evolved?
For me, I did start an S-Corp business with DAG. So we want to expand, make more maps, have under our name. So in 3 years, ideally we'd have this one and we'd have a couple more. I can't imagine it doing better than this one, but that'd be great. Four or five that has we have our solid audience. And I guess that's how I envision me in 3 years. And also I wouldn't be a developer. I'd more be a senior engineer where I don't actually have to do the code. I just review people's code.
You don't want to be CEO. You just want to be senior engineer for a company.
Honestly, I don't. I've been in so many meetings the past months that I don't think I don't think I wanted to do that.
Hire me.
All right. But there's so many marketing meetings going back and forth. And so I just want to make cool things. I really don't care about this. Some of these, I do care. Obviously I do care. It's just, it's not what I'm passionate about. Going through these meetings and talking about designing. Let's say we're making a new pregame lobby. I just want to make some fun mini games, touch my brain. But it's obviously a very crucial part of our map. But that's the stuff I'm not interested in. I just want to make cool stuff. I don't think I'm that marketing, the brand stuff, all that, those meetings, they don't interest me. I can't imagine myself wanting to do that in 3 years, unless I have to.
I think that this is a struggle that many entrepreneurs have is when as their company grows, they find themselves doing things that weren't why they got started in the first place. So I'm hopeful that you'll be able to figure it out and make sure you keep doing what you love. And I'm curious, Zach, on your side, What does 3 years from now look like for you besides the long beard?
Yeah, I think at the moment it's probably some combination of either having in hand this UGC platform that disrupts everybody else. I would love to find a way to find someone to work on that with and figure that out, because I think there's a lot of opportunity to facilitate human imagination and interactive experiences. And I don't even think we've even seen the start of what that even looks like yet. It's really early days I feel like we're using these really old, weird cameras that you see from the 1800s or whatever. We're very early on in this state of the art when it comes to building experiences. And on the other side of that coin, I think it's, for me at the moment, I'm spending a lot of time with creators and really helping to see if I can facilitate their vision and what they want to do within Fortnite or Roblox or any of these other spaces, and spending even more time trying to understand the social media space stuff, where Birdo is coming from. I think a huge part of this is being successful with anything is building audiences. I'm excited about like the combination of all those spaces. And so 3 years from now, I'm hoping to have a whole lot of tools under my tool belt and experience in all those things.
And for listeners who want to follow you guys going forward, what's the best way for them to do that?
For me, either my TikTok is where you can watch the videos that I use. So that's Birdo TV. And then more for the mini game updates and like personal stuff, I'd say the better one is Twitter, which is Birdo Bro. Yeah.
Yeah, I was debating on whether or not you're going to say X, Birdo, or you're going to say Twitter. And then, for me, it's actually probably my LinkedIn, which is just under Zach Phelps. And then also on Twitter, at Zookeeper Zach.
Awesome. Zach and Birdo, thank you guys so much for joining. This has been an awesome conversation. I think the audience learned a lot about building UGC game platforms or being successful on them. Thanks so much for joining.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure.
If you enjoyed today's episode, whether on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, or give a 5-star review. And if you want to reach out or provide feedback, shoot us a note at podcast@navik.co or find us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Plus, if you want to learn more about what Navik has to offer, make sure to check out our website, www.navik.co. There, you can sign up for the #1 games industry newsletter, Navik Digest, or contact us to learn about our wide-ranging consulting and advisory services. Again, that is www.navik.co. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.